Welcome to the podcast where heavy industrial industries meet the venture capital ecosystem, interviewing both thought-leading investors and pioneering founders to better understand the opportunities and challenges that lie ahead for digital industrial innovation. Your host is Ty Finley, and this is the Heavy Hitters Podcast.
Kaushal Diwan joins us today from Sacramento. He is the Corporate Director of Strategic Investments and Partnerships for DPR Construction and also wears a second hat as a partner and board member for DPR's corporate venture capital arm, WND Ventures. He has over 17 years in the construction industry between both DPR and Clark Construction and has played nearly every role in the sector, spanning from his first job as an estimator to leading projects and self-performed crews. And aligned to this chat, he has spent over two-thirds of his career and time at DPR focused specifically on driving tech and innovation adoption within the construction industry. Kaushal, it wasn't too long ago, we were all out at the Built World's Venture Conference in San Francisco discussing all this Built World innovation together in person. So it's great to have you on the Heavy Hitters and keep the chat going. Welcome.
Thank you, Ty. Great to be here and I'm appreciating you giving me the time to share my experience and knowledge.
Right on. Well, you got a great story here. And aligned to that, I always give a little snippet, but our show always starts with you giving us more color commentary on that journey and what led you to DPR and eventually joining the WND Ventures team.
Yeah, thank you. Honestly, this my career growth, my road to WND Ventures has not been a straight one. It's actually a lot of coincidences, life experiences, and me asking myself, how do I want to challenge myself? How do I want to do something different that I have not already done before? And long story short, that's kind of how I got to WND Ventures and DPR. You know, as you had mentioned, I've got some time in the industry, you know, between two different firms, majority of my time at DPR. And it all boiled down to a couple of things. Before I got into the construction industry, I was an Air Force officer. And my passion was to serve my country and also learn how to lead people. And at the end of the day, become a leader of men, leader of projects, teams, things that help us move forward and advance. And I saw construction as being that type of an industry where I can drive results, I can lead folks and help achieve results. And that's what got me into construction. What I realized was that my passion was not into the building process, the traditional PM, pre-con, type roles, but I did always gravitate towards technology. And so later in 2008, when VDC BIM technology started entering the market, this is where I really took off in my career and found a passion, and that's what brought me to DPR. Building on that passion for technology, I was later asked by the company to join our innovation team and lead the group. And really the ask there was, we have this ever forward culture at DPR where we are empowering our employees to try new things. What ends up happening is if you're not careful, you get into this process and mindset of chasing shiny objects. And the company really needed to figure out a disciplined process, which is where I thought I could help. That was my time at DPR on the innovation side, and really focused on engaging with startups, focused on how to create a process to intake requests and create new engagements, figure out a process of how we try new things, learn from them, and then go on to the next one. And then ultimately figure out how we make strategic investments. So not only are we supporting these startups by commercial agreements, but also helping them grow their companies on the investment side. So that's really my story. Long story short, I've had a passion in technology, but also importantly, I want to be a true leader in this industry by leading by example and trying to add value wherever I can.
Love it. And I firmly believe, right, to drive innovation in the broader built world, however we want to define it, you certainly got to have that domain experience as well, which your background fits perfectly. And you also mentioned the culture of DPR and how you're able to help drive that innovation agenda We're going to come back to that for sure here in a second. But maybe first, just help us set the stage a little bit. Maybe our listeners that are a little unfamiliar, but tell us more about DPR generally, and then about the WND Ventures Fund mandate that you and some other great allies, Eric and Atul, have set up. It's a pretty impressive platform. So let's school our listeners up a little bit.
Yeah. So DPR Construction was founded in 1990 by Doug, Peter, and Ron. Doug Woods, Peter Nosler, and Ron Davidowski. That's the DP and the R. And from day one, the company has always had this mindset of always doing right by the customer and always not settling, always learning from whatever we do, having enjoyment as part of our process and being unique in what we do. And so integrity, enjoyment, uniqueness, and number four are the four company values. Fast forward to today, about 30 or so business units for the company across the United States and several and few international locations. And in terms of an ENR placement, the company has ranked top 10 and consistently in the past past few years. I think recently we ranked number 7 on the chart. The company finished about $9 billion in revenue as of last year, and it's this story about innovation. Where that started was it all stemmed from this culture of ever forward thinking. And so innovation group, you really didn't start hearing about innovation teams and construction companies up until about 5 or 6 years ago. But DPR's innovation group, this was founded in 2011 by employee number 9. His name's Jim Washburn. And so what Jim really did for us was he created this mindset with our employees that it's okay to try things. It's okay to fail. The most important thing we want to do is learn from it so that we're constantly moving forward and becoming critical thinkers and in the way we tackle construction problems. And so the group started going, and 2011 to 2015, it really built this ability for the company to start leveraging external innovation, working with startups, working with entrepreneurs to then help solve some of our company problems. And then when I was asked to lead the group, this was about the time where we started seeing stuff in the industry where construction technology startups were entering the market. And so the company needed to figure out a disciplined process of how do we track some of these things. And that's kind of when they brought me in. What is this why behind this whole thing? The why has always been there. It's we want to make sure that we are enabling our ever forward core value, but also at the same time, we're turning our business, our employees, our project managers who are tackling these construction problems into critical problem solvers, and also using design thinking skills to maybe come up with new ideas and solutions to age old problems.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, it speaks for itself when, 25 years or so ago, the company's founders, I think the quote's still on your website, are motivated by the opportunity to do things differently in an industry resistant to change. That's certainly a rallying cry. And like you said, you guys have been in the top 10 of the ENR 500 rankings consistently. Nothing but admiration for what you guys have done for the ecosystem. And maybe just to do a real quick zoom in, on the layer of why behind setting up a separate VC arm, WND Ventures, that those of us in the built world investment community know well, why set up that separate venture arm and, kind of what stage, check size, how do you guys think about that fund mandate in a little more color?
Yeah, WND Ventures was set up in, I believe, in 2017. But this is a couple of years after DPR made its first investment in a startup. DPR has made investments in startups since 2015. As the venture activity started kicking up and picking up in later years, we realized that we probably needed to find a way to house some of these investments into a company that basically manages that equity. So that was one reason behind that. And WND actually stands for Woods, Nosler, Davidowski. So these are the last name initials of the founders of DP&R. And so the why behind it initially was, let's find a way to sort of house all these investments in one spot and then create a group who can make some strategic discussions and decisions on how we support VCs. Fast forward to today, our why behind this is sometimes you realize that a startup, they need two things, right? One, they need traction on getting their solution out there and then and gaining traction and getting customers. But two, they also need venture investments. And those are two very separate problems. And we find ourselves as DPR and WND that we can help them in both ways. Our innovation team engages with startups, and our goal is to help them solve the problems or help have them help us solve our problems, but also give them feedback on how to sort of fine tune their solutions. Sometimes what we find is they have a hard time fundraising, and having a logo like DPR or WND on their cap table helps them. And so when that happens, a WND Ventures investment is then basically comes into play. But on the investment side, the focus there is more, is there alignment with our business needs? Is this solving a key business problem for us? And does a venture investment help the startup ultimately gain traction and fundraise themselves?
Right on. And we're going to come back to that process of how you guys internally, before even externally, engaging with which innovation opportunities you want to dig in on. But before I go there, just a quick sub question. Did you say WND Ventures launched, call it formally, like 2017 timeframe? Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. So maybe then the question, and we've had some of this offline chat, but I think it'd be good for the audience here. Was there any like one thing, right? We've seen over the last 5 to 7 years, venture dollars from a deals and dollars perspective have definitely flooded into the broader built world ecosystem like never before. And certainly the construction ecosystem has been innovating for a long time before venture figured it out. But was there any one thing just specific to the venture ecosystem you think catalyzed all this money flowing in to help push forward the built world innovation agenda?
I think there's probably I'll give you my opinion. I don't know if this is the right answer, but I think the answer is long time it's remained relatively stagnant, right? The construction CVCs have always invested in construction tech startups, and it still didn't really move the needle as much. But once, I think it was 2017, 2018, when we started seeing this inflection point of tremendous amount of dollars coming into the industry, and it was really fueling this whole startup movement into construction technology. I think what that did was it opened up the eyes to people outside of industry that, hey, untapped market here, both not only to help solve the industry its problems, but also maybe walk away with some investment dollars because we fueled it. And so what we saw was maybe some outside non-industry investors coming into the space, which fueled the amount of startups that we're now developing solutions for the industry. So I think my opinion is, once people realize that there's tremendous opportunity in construction tech that can really help the industry move forward, I think people started investing in it. That's what was kind of a catalyst. And so we saw that investment coming in sort of in waves year after year, up until I think it was COVID year. And then even there in COVID, it kept on coming in. So that's my opinion. I think that catalyst from outside industry investors was one of a key thing that helped move this thing forward.
Yeah, I think it's a great one. Obviously, lots of variables at play, but I think that is a critical one. And I'm with you. There is a huge opportunity to drive a big impact, but also make great returns. And that's where the capital was following it. So, well, maybe let's go back to where I was saying that the idea you guys have a pretty refined process now and getting more tactical about how you scope in what you do or don't engage. And so you and I, we've discussed it is a major undertaking to effectively build and deploy corporate innovation and investment arms. I know part of my background at GE Ventures, I lived it myself. There are so many internal, external stakeholders all over the place involved. So many diverging interests and incentives to align. And certainly at this point in the built world innovation ecosystem, so many vendors to evaluate, which I think is a great thing to say, but there are a lot of things. You mentioned shiny objects. You got to focus now. But you and the team have developed a pretty rigorous and defined process for engaging innovation start to finish. And so I'd love for you to walk us through those steps that DPR leverages to first internally align on what your priorities are, and then how you effectively engage and filter innovators to ultimately drive a win-win for all of those involved. Would love for you to walk us through how you guys do that.
Yeah, definitely, Ty. This is sort of we look at it in two different ways. And so on one side, this is a curiosity based challenge where you're going to have something that you know that there's a problem that you need to solve. You may come across a solution, and you don't know if that solution will solve the problem or even if create a new problem. You don't know that, but it's a very curiosity-driven process. And then on the flip side of that, you have a very well-defined problem. You know that there are maybe one or two solutions that can solve it, and then you go about trying to solve that problem with a new solution in a more strategic fashion. Those two things, I call one side the curiosity innovation. I call the other side a strategic innovation. And what I've learned, you know, in the last 12 years or so is that you need to be able to support both. And so the early years when Jim Washburn started the group, to when I took over to now where I'm handing it over to our new innovation leader, Tim Gaylord, we've learned that we focused quite a bit on this curiosity innovation part of the business. And what that did was it allowed us to sort of eliminate this fear that that you shouldn't be trying and failing things. Like you should, it's okay to fail things, right? Moving forward to now, what we're realizing is that the business is moving at a very fast pace and there's tons of solutions out there. So you need to be able to filter through all the solutions that are alike and then identify which is the right one for your business and how you do business. So our process today has baked in two different work streams. There's one that focuses on curiosity innovation, allowing our employees to try new things and experiment. Process innovation has been the same that it's always been. It's basically bring to us a problem that you're trying to solve and how you're going to go about solving that problem. Second side of it, which is majority of our innovation team's focus, is aligning, you know, business needs with the innovation practice. And so today, our business, we perform what's known as business unit assessments. And what these business unit assessments do is it takes into account some key metrics and criteria that are important to the business units themselves. So if a business unit says, hey, today I want to focus on, you know, reality capture or visual planning or some other, you know, function of operations, they prioritize those efforts. So then what that tells the innovation team is that, hey, in the Northwest, they're working on this, Southwest, they're working on that, Southeast, they're working on this. It gives our team some focus on which areas we want to innovate in. And so the innovation team then goes in and starts digging in to understand what problems exist, what challenges exist in those business units, and then aligns that with what's out there on the vendor community and startup community. So one part of it is understanding which problems you're trying to solve, right? The second part of it is now understanding of what solutions are out there so you can start challenging these problems with solutions. So on that side of the coin, what we have an intake process where each time a vendor reaches out to the innovation team, you know, whether it's an email or a phone call, we point them to this new vendor management platform that we use. It's basically a form where we ask them to fill out what their solution is, what problems that solution solves, what's the cost, you know, what's the lead time, who are the points of contacts, even ask them, how do you expect to pilot this solution, you know, to maybe just gain an understanding if they even understand construction. Once that vendor submits that their solution in our vendor management platform, once a month, an innovation team goes through all the incoming inquiries and then evaluates them, does a gut check of, hey, is this something that we need? Is this something we already have? Or is this something that's untested, right? And they basically categorize those things. And out of the 9 folks on the current team, each person takes on a responsibility of chasing down with that startup. And so what ends up happening is, let's say you get 10 to 20 coming in a month, hypothetically speaking. Out of those 10 to 20, they'll probably narrow down somewhere between 10 to 15 that they need to investigate further. And then those 10 to 15 then turn into maybe about 5 to 8 that we invite for a demo day to the internal technology innovation team, which is about 50 to 60 folks. And then we go from there to then piloting that solution. And so it's take, you know, vendors on one side, understanding the business needs and problems on the other side, and then trying to matchmake between those two for specific pilot opportunities. And then on the other side, it's also looking at sort of curiosity innovation and keeping that critical thinking, curiosity side of the business going.
Love it. And incredibly well structured. It's like a template. We got to figure a way to propagate it into more corporates to help corral all the innovation that's going on. And so maybe what I also want to parlay that DPR funneling process, once an innovator has made it through, let's pull this back into the venture side for a minute. At what point does W&D Ventures get involved to evaluate whether it's a VC investment merited or not? And I'd also love to know, you know, if W&D Ventures does decide to partner from an investment perspective, you know, given the sheer size of DPR, as I'm sure, same was for me at GE, there's going to be other similar innovation efforts being trialed across other business units potentially. So how do you manage that part of it as well if you do have a W&D Ventures investment in one of these opportunities?
Yeah, it's also there. So the investment opportunities come to us both either through a deal flow that the innovation team has created, or it's basically an investment target that we've said we want to prioritize on the venture side. So I'll give you examples of both. The one example is this whole thing that I just mentioned about the intake process with the innovation team and then running pilots that they're trying to do on business problems. When something like that happens, what ends up happening is that a solution or a vendor starts popping up on the radar for multiple business units, right? Let's say a business unit in Florida is trying a solution that solved their problem, but a business unit in Sacramento is also facing the same problem. Call up, pick up the phone, and the business unit leaders will talk like, hey, what's working for you? Or they'll call the innovation team and say, hey, how do we tackle this problem? Next thing you know, that solution starts taking steam and traction across DPR. And it starts, you know, getting on job sites. You know, you start one job site, then you end up on five job sites. You start ending up on 10 job sites. So when it starts becoming a practice at DPR, when stuff like that happens, where a solution takes off and it's business is pulling for that solution and we're not pushing it, that's an indicator that we probably need to look into it deeper and understand if this is a venture investment. So that's a deal flow creation from the innovation team. Mm. On the flip side, lately in the past year or two, innovation team, the venture side has put some time and thought behind what is our thesis? What are the areas that we want to focus on? And we realized that we don't want to focus on tech categories. We want to focus on larger themes that any one of these tech categories can fit into. So for example, sustainability is a theme, quality is a theme, safety is a theme. And each one of these themes has a corresponding workgroup leader. So there is a safety leader at DPR. There's a quality leader at DPR. And what I have done is reached out to those teams and asked them, what are some of business focus areas that you have? What are some key problems that you're prioritizing and making part of your business plans? I take that information, I translate that into an investment target that W&D says, hey, innovation team, I need your help in solving this target. So the innovation team does is they take that information, they go out there and scout the industry, to look at what's out there, what solutions are out there that might be able to tackle these challenges. And then they do pilots on those solutions. And what comes out of it is, let's say you're piloting 4 to 5 solutions, maybe there's one or two that are rising up to the top because they're hitting our problems and solving them in a very, you know, strategic fashion and something that's more aligned with what we're looking for. Top then is when I will do a partnership workshop with them. You know, my big thing is I want to make sure startups understand that I would like to be more than a check. If all they're looking for is an investment from W&D, then we're probably not the right folks. But if their intent is we want to partner with W&D and DPR, we want to bring to understanding what these problems are, and there's an equal exchange of contributions from both sides, that's a good partner for me. And from there, it makes that investment decision even easier. So that's our process, both on both sides, both from the venture side, but also a deal flow creation from the innovation side.
Well, huge win for them to get to partner up with you. Couldn't imagine why they would not want to take that check if they made it through the gauntlet. And great win-win setup for both sides for sure. Well, maybe I'll push us forward here. And I definitely have to go to a crowd favorite question here with you as my guest, with all that you've seen in the construction innovation ecosystem. Our audience of listeners always looking to learn more about trends and or areas that have the fastest moving adoption within the ecosystem. So the section I like to call what's hot and what's hype. Any thoughts you have about which technologies and or innovative business model approaches that are hot and currently being deployed at scale versus areas of innovation that may be promising but are likely, I always use the Gartner term, overhyped right now, given immature commercial readiness? Would just enjoy hearing your thoughts on the trends on what's hot and what's hype, if we could.
Yeah, I mean, man, this one, we probably spend the whole show on this one. I'll probably just tackle, you know, the low hanging fruit. I think one thing that has been very, very vocal and I guess present in the media is this thing about ChatGPT or AI, right? What's interesting is that AI has been here for a while. It's something that a lot of companies are trying to adopt. They're trying to clean up their data so they can put some kind of an AI or machine learning model so that they can use their previous historical data to be able to make informed decisions and make it more predictive, right? And the cool thing is, so what ChatGPT effort has done is some of it's hype in a sense where it's not ready yet. It's still a model that's in its early research stages and it's learning how to develop and be more stable. But the good thing that he has done is it's made the conversation around AI more present, more relevant, and people are now more curious and looking into it, right? So I'd say AI, the stuff about ChatGPT, it's some of it's hype, some of it's real, some of it's here. Moving on, robotics, robots are here to stay. The other thing, what you're seeing with robotics is that certain types of robots, single use case robots, I'll call it that, things like layout robots or, you know, reality capture robots. These things are stable. I think that technology is here to stay and will continue and evolve. But then there's also these other edge cases, right? You're starting to see Tesla and some of these other companies like Boston Dynamics come up with these humanoid type robots, things that look like humans and perform like humans. That's something that's more of an edge case. I think we're still trying to see how something like that could be efficient and work on our job sites alongside humans. So those are probably two extremes, but robotics, there's pieces that are here to stay that are good now, but there's also pieces that are sort of a little bit hyped, but sort of a wait and see kind of a thing. I think there are still some gaps that maybe, you know, we are not addressing. I'll tell you this one gap that, you know, we've got all these point solutions that we have in the industry that are trying to fix how we do submittals or trying to fix how we look at drawings or how do we interact, you know, one system to another. The challenge between how do you track procurement of materials on a job site, it's still there. I'm just the other day, I was talking to a PE and I'm looking at sort of how they're taking data that comes out of P6, they're looking at information that comes out of spec books and what's the middles and materials they need to have on site. And then they're talking to superintendents of, hey, when does the material need to be on site? And they're kind of doing this science on an Excel spreadsheet, right? And to this day, I'm surprised that nobody has solved that problem. You know, basically leveraging data from multiple sources, from not only from pre-con, from P6 schedules to middle logs on, you know, on the PM solutions and put it all together and say, hey, this is how we do procurement better. So I'm still waiting to see on that one, Ty, but that one is sort of a nobody's solved it problem, if you ask me. But hopefully the AI robotics makes sense and the procurement piece makes sense. And then the one that's sort of on the rise right now are these sustainability solutions, you know, things around carbon tracking, embodied carbon and stuff like that.
Absolutely. All great trends. And, you know, the procurement one is actually, it's fresh on our minds as well. And I know we were co-invested in Pipe.io with Sunil, and, you know, the submittal log automation process is just one part of the equation of the broader procurement value chain that I think you and I are both hunting to try to find some more efficiency there. So couldn't agree with you more and love the hedge on ChatGPT and robotics, some hype, but some real. I think that's a fair way of going about it. And then, of course, sustainability is a rallying cry for everyone. So all good stuff here. And, you know, what I'd love to do, maybe the last question here, we always love to bring the discussion back to those founders in the arena specifically. And have you give them some words of wisdom if they're needing to raise venture or thinking about approaching WND Ventures? We always love if you have any quick hitters, just, you know, a key to success for them as they enter the chat or maybe a common challenge to avoid as they kick things off.
I look at a couple of things. You know, I think for me, a startup has to be able to prove that they have happy customers, right? So it's sort of a qualitative, quantitative kind of thing where on the qualitative side, it's easy to get, right? If you have happy customers, how are you getting some of those testimonials so that, or sort of referrals so that on the VC side, they can see that you have traction with your solution. And then once you have traction, you should have some quantitative data which says, hey, based on this, we've gone from this number of customers to double that or some kind of an ARR type metric. The other thing I also see is startups that need to understand sort of what's their thesis for the next couple of chapters of their company. For a VC, they want to know, where's this going after phase one, after phase two, after phase three? Because what that translates to is investors want to know how they're going to get some of their money back, how this solution is going to generate revenue, right? So having some sort of a plausible thesis for the next couple of chapters of your company is very important to have. And then the other third thing that's more of a sub bullet to that, to the plausible thesis part, is that maybe if you're trying to get a company like DPR as your customer, you look at that problem in a different way, right? So DPR, $9 billion company, very strict processes in some ways, but also open to trying new things in other ways. If you're creating a solution that's tailored towards a project manager on a DPR project, maybe not start with that person as your first customer. Maybe start with a smaller customer. Maybe start with a $300 million or a $500 million company and see if you can address that same problem with a project manager from that company. Because what you'll find is that $300 million company project manager probably has the same problems as the $9 billion PM from a DPR project. But if you're able to address that smaller customer, the larger customer is a lot easier to then, to gain, to sort of put on your solution. So those are probably some quick thoughts there on what I've learned.
That's great advice. Help set them up well as they start having those discussions. Well, we always wrap up here on the show with a little section we call quick hitters for some rapid fire Q&A. So if you're ready, we'll jump in.
Sure, let's do it.
All right. What is the number one thing you're looking for when you're evaluating a founder within this construction tech ecosystem to be successful?
Well, that's a pretty simple one. If you're building a construction solution, do you know about construction and the process? I look for construction experience or knowledge from the founders.
Got to have that domain experience. Couldn't agree with you more. What's one resource? It could be anything, but podcast, blog you'd recommend our audience to follow in the ecosystem.
This is an interesting one. I don't know if I have a specific thing there, Ty. I think for me, it more boils down to how do you prefer to receive information? Like for me, sometimes it's reading, short articles or reading books. For some folks, it's podcasts or listening to things as they're driving. I think it's more about what is your preference, right? And then sticking to that preference to gain that knowledge.
Right on. Who's one person that, for those that like podcasts, who should be on the show to help build an ecosystem alongside us?
So I think that's no better person than my partner in crime, Tim Gaylord, who leads DPR's Innovation Group now.
Right on. We'll have to get him as he takes the reins of the innovation side. And then finally, the best way for folks to reach out to you after the show.
LinkedIn is a good funnel for me. Emails sometimes get lost. But if you send a LinkedIn request, just be patient with me. I go through those on a periodic, periodically. And so I'll get back to you on LinkedIn.
Such a powerful tool. Love it. Well, we've talked a lot about how we've made a lot of progress, the last 5 to 7 years. We talked about some VC fuel being pumped in here, but I think we're just getting started. So it's an exciting time, and you and I are both rallying to get more folks to come in and help us build in the ecosystem, to use the pun. But I appreciate you coming on the show and look forward to finding more to work with you on.
Thank you, Ty. Thank you for having me.